E2. Number 19A.
We did take yesterday the minor prophets as far as we were considering the word vertical, the Christ vertical, and Christianity vertical. And so I continue with the science vertical, which we have described as an index for that vertical, the operation of the idea in its principle. That's our epitome for the whole vertical column. You have a sense that it has to do with science because it deals with the idea in its principle, that science. The operation of that idea in its principle is indicating really the Christ matrix, the Christ of the Christ matrix, namely Christ in operation, and especially because we see that when these prophets describe that operation, that it has a Christ touch, in that it is showing us that it shows the wrong operation, in not in principle, but in people or in things, and the Christ coming really to retranslate the wrong operation into the right operation in principle. This we will see with all these prophets. The three minor prophets in this column are those prophets that were prophesying after the exile. They are therefore the post-exilic prophets when Israel came back from the captivity and had to build up again not only their homes, but also their land, and especially their temple. And the temple is a symbol really for principle, the central symbol for the realm of God. And so they had to rebuild the temple. And all these three prophets are prophesying and speaking about that temple, which is a symbol for principle, and therefore want to show how to operate in regard to the temple, in regard to principle. Haggai is the first one. It's only about 2 pages, but he is such a terrific prophet because he takes really the problem at its root and brings out the following main proposition. They came home from captivity and were freed. And what did they do with their religious freedom and with being able now to worship God again? What did they do? They operated wrongly. They operated by building up their own sealed houses, as he said. Each one was concerned with himself and operated just for his own egotistic way, just to make a go out of his own life. But the temple of the Lord laid waste. They weren't interested in building up the principle of being. They were not willing to serve the temple, the principle. And so Haggai came along and was rebuking the people that they were just considering building up their sealed houses. And he urged them to turn away from that and to build the temple, and to build it so that the temple would be even more beautiful than before. And so he urged them to build stone upon stone. Can you see? He urged them really to get acquainted with the ideas of the seven synonymous terms, step by step. In John Dolly's matrix, we have at this point of science as the word, we have the numerals of infinity, and Haggai was showing that they were building up not the numerals of infinity, but that they were building with their own thoughts, with their own egotistic thoughts, all turning around their own self, and that he urged them to operate You have a sense of operation, to operate in a different way, namely to operate such that as their first and main concern would be to build up the numerals of infinity constituting the divine principle of being. So they started building up the temple, and a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord, so that the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, says the Lord of hosts. That is his great message here. You can see what he is saying to us today. He says to us today that we are loving Christian Science, but we use it to build up our own sealed houses, to make little demonstrations about our own affairs, that all we are thinking about how we can make a demonstration for us, a demonstration of health in our body, of health in our business, of health in our family. And then usually the circle is closed, and what happens outside of that circle is not one's business. That's the other person's business. And he is saying you can't operate that way because you limit your field, you limit your principle to your own, and therefore you acknowledge that you are a person and that you are not principle's own idea. If you would see that you are principle's own idea, you wouldn't be concerned about your family any more than you are concerned about any Chinese or any African or any Russian or whatever it is. You would have a universe of idea, you would have a principle of the universe, and you would demonstrate the universe and not your own sealed house. And so he said, nothing will go to happen in Israel until they turn to building the temple. So we can see that as long as we take Christian Science in order to demonstrate our better life, a better life that is concerned with us, we will never get anywhere. No one will get anywhere. This is a law in being, because that is a consciousness which is so limited, so personal, that it contradicts the principle of being. And this is an old, old law, the great mystery of God, so to say, that if you take the greater, that it controls the lesser. That if you serve the divine principle, that it will take care of the lesser things, but not the other way around. That we take care of the lesser things, that this will contribute to the bigger. It is not so. People think that if they make their own demonstration, and each one would make their own demonstration, that through adding and adding and addition you would get somewhere. But we know today that structure says that the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts. So each one can make his own demonstration about his own affairs, and that doesn't amount really only to a hill of beans, but not to a structure. It's just adding a little bit. And Haggai was seeing that, and that was his great, great message. And he could see that the Christ would be working that way, that the Christ would impel Israel to turn away from the operation in a tiny little circle and make them work in the divine principle of being. And actually, if we accept that right from the start, and have right from the start really that attitude, we can be a contributor to the advancement of the idea right from the beginning. Yes, that's the message of Haggai. Then we come to Zechariah. Zechariah is one of the most exquisite prophecy, especially when we consider it in its structure. He's a very, very young prophet that came home from the exile and was prophesying at more or less about the same time as Haggai, but he had a wonderful structured sense of being. Whereas most of the other prophets just had a linear sense and were delivering their message in an order of mostly the word order sense. Zechariah had a wonderfully structured sense. He was delivering his message in the four orders, the word order, the Christ order, the Christianity order, and the science order. And when you read him and can somehow decipher, decode his symbolism, which is very often very near to the symbolism of Apocalypse, and if one decodes that, one really feels here is somebody who saw really that man is a divine infinite calculus, and that what he prophesies is actually, again, that the idea, that's the vertical, is operating in its principle, and that that idea as science is a calculus operating its principle. But from the point of view of the horizontal, as the enforcement of the disappearance or the enforcement of retranslation, he is showing through his prophecy that man as a material and human calculus, as a thought calculator, you know, we always calculate in our thoughts. We always say, if I do this, then that and that will happen, and if he reacts so and so, then I will react so and so. You see, our human thought is constantly calculating and computing with thoughts and with illusions, and he could see that that is the wrong concept of man, the wrong consciousness of man, a mortal calculus of man. And he was predicting that if one would build the true temple and would be operating in the true temple, namely in the divine principle, that the Christ would translate or retranslate the mortal calculus, the human thinking calculus, into the divine infinite calculus. And because he does that, he has to show it in those four orders. He's the one that uses constantly the symbols of the calculus as seven and as four. He speaks of the four horns, the four carpenters, the four winds, the four chariots, and the four spirits in heaven. You don't have to write that down. It's all in my book. You just have to read my book. That's all. All what I say is in my book, only that it's much better in my book than what I talk right here. But because I could see that over 12 years my book was not read. No, it was read, but not understood in the slightest. I give these talks so that afterwards you can go home and begin to realize what I'm saying there. He speaks about the seven quite often. It is the seven eyes about he is speaking. It is the candlestick with the seven pipes and the seven lamps. And he gives you a very wonderful picture. He starts out in his prophecy saying that the fathers did not hear nor hearken unto the Lord. They did not want to turn their thought to the divine principle. That's how he went out, and his whole prophecy is to show how the Christ will be working on them, so that at the end of the prophecy he could see that they will accept it, that everything will turn to the Lord, that even the smallest detail will turn to the Lord. He says that the day will come when even the smallest of things, namely the bells of the horses and every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah, shall be holiness unto the Lord. Can you see, until even the bells of the horses and every pot in Jerusalem, every little insignificant thing, is even working within the principle of being, that there is nothing left out in that whole temple or in that whole system. So, can you see what he wants to teach? He wants really to teach that instead of having in one's consciousness a egotistic human mortal computer of thought, that the Christ does not want to let that in peace, but that the Christ will come and transform and enforce a retranslation. That's our horizontal. And retranslate and enforce that retranslation until man and every little thing in the universe will accept the divine infinite calculus, will be holiness unto the Lord. It's a beautiful story. Yeah. Then we go to Malachi, the last of the minor prophets, and Malachi is again speaking about the temple, but again in another way. Haggai said you should build the temple. Then Zechariah was showing how man operates in the temple. And now Malachi shows how we should serve in the temple. He is interested in seeing how we should operate in the temple, in the principle. Again, we have the vertical, the operation in principle in the temple. But from the point of view of Christianity, namely showing how all that which is not serving rightly in the temple should disappear, and that the right service of man in the temple should be established. And he shows the futility of serving wrongly in the temple, and what it means to serve wrongly in the temple. And he shows the abundance that is flowing out from God if we serve rightly in the temple. This is Malachi's great prophecy, and you can see it by just a few indications that really makes up everything, or is a central theme in it. He more or less asks, when he asks how to serve in the temple, the one that served in the temple was symbolized by the priest. What is man in his true priesthood, and how should he be clothed in his priesthood in order to be serving rightly? That man actually should be clothed, that is great point, should be clothed with the nature of God, and that only the nature of God should be used as a serving medium in serving the divine principle. He could see that the people, after they have had rebuilt their temple, would be cheating, really, that temple, the offerings that they had to bring, the service they had to bring, the tithe which they had to bring. And he was rebuking Israel that when they were bringing their tithe, they actually were bringing their tithes, but they always would choose that which was of no value to them. They were obeying outwardly, but inwardly it had no value for the one who served it, because he would show that if they would have to sacrifice a lamb, give that as their service and as their tithe, that they would take that lamb which was sick or which was lame and which they couldn't use anyway. That it would not even be good anymore for slaughter and get some money out of the meat. That they would always offer the sickly things, the lame things, that all that which had no value. And you could see how he wants to depict that what is necessary in order to serve God is that one gives one's whole to it, and not just something insignificant, that it is a whole devotion, really what he shows, and that only in the measure that we serve God with what? With the God qualities. That's that which is whole. That only if we approach God and serve God with the qualities of mind and the qualities of spirit and the qualities of soul and with the qualities of principle and life, truth and love, Only if we serve God with those qualities, that only then will God give us a blessing of the equal nature. Then we will get the blessing of mind, and we'll get the blessing of spirit, and we'll get the blessing of soul, and the blessing of principle, and life, truth, and love. He shows there really the real trade that says, if I give you this, you get back the same value. Where demand and supply meet and say, it's all a matter of what you give, that's what you get. In the beginning of his prophecy, he really states that actually that fundamentally man is the beloved of God, but that the people did not accept that standard, and that they dropped that standard of being the son of God, and were therefore a wrong priest serving with the meanest value and the lowest value they could offer. At the end, you know, that big statement where it says that bring ye the whole tithe into the storehouse. The whole, meaning whole, a healthy one, that which is mind-like, spirit-like, soul-like, bring that into the storehouse and prove me. See, it's at the point of science where it says, this is not chance, that there is not, nothing happens there by accident. It's a provable principle, and prove me herewith, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Can you see what we bring to that principle? That principle pours out on us. So we can't be mean and say, well, the smallest is good enough for God, you know, to think, well, first I have to go about my own business, and if I have 10 minutes left at night, then perhaps I can go to bed and take my textbook and read the 10 minutes so that I fall asleep a little bit better, and I have felt I have done something, some service to the Lord. It really shows put first things first. So I never have any compassion with anybody who says, I have no time to study Christian Science. Not so whatever. Because one always has time for the important thing. If somebody would come along and say, you know, over the street you can get some tons of gold, do you have time to get it? Would you think that everybody would say, no, perhaps tonight before I go to bed I may have 10 minutes to get it? They would have time. Can be quite sure. One always has time for the things that one values, that one feels is important. Always. That's how even human nature is built. Not even divine nature that is built that way. Human nature is also built that way, that it puts in everything there where it thinks I get out the most. All right? If one thinks one gets more out of anything else but of the divine principle, one puts in one's energies and one's efforts and one's time and everything into that. That's what Malachi could see, that we really serve that what we value. But he also said, you can prove me that you don't get more back than what you put in, because God is not Santa Claus, you know, that just appears sometime, or you call it different, like a Christmas. Santa Claus? Yeah? Okay, you see? Or Uncle Sam? I don't know which way it is. So, principle, you see, is impersonal. It's just a science. It's just a factual thing which says, what you put in, you actually take out, you see. It's not some mystical God that says, all right, in my check account you have put in so and so much, and now you get back so and so much. It's a It's a spiritual attitude. It's our spiritual ideas, impersonal, which just show that terrific law that if we operate in a principle, we get back principle's blessing. If we operate in a personal concept, we get back all the hell of people and of the people universe. So at the end of it, he is really seeing that there will be an overflowing of blessing if man admits that he is really willing to put in everything he has into the principle. Then we come to the last prophet, the last of the major prophet, Daniel. And Daniel, again, he's a young man, very young man, but full of wisdom and full of knowledge. And reading through Daniel, actually, one shouldn't be taken up with the interest of one or the other of those nice stories of Daniel in the lion's den and things, which one learns in Sunday school and thinks that's all about Daniel, that he has been with the lions. But taking the whole structure, you know, of Daniel and seeing what he is saying, then really one sees that he was a great, great prophet. He was a great prophet. He too was showing and presenting his message in the word order, then in the Christ order, then in the Christianity order, then in the science order. But everything turns around science as science. What does that mean here? We have here the Christ, always as the matrix stone, showing that there was always operating the Christ science mind, the mind of Christ science in Daniel, namely that he could operate, that his understanding, that he could operate in principle at the point, really, of the horizontal, of understanding really God. Everything is about that he operated on the basis of understanding God. The Christ in it would always show that his understanding of the divine principle would always be the Savior, either for him or for the king or for anybody. Could you see that? There is always the Christ, big Christ tone in it, the Savior, the power of God coming to Daniel, either in dreams or this or that way, and always saving the situation, either his situation or the situation of the three men in the fiery furnace, or saving the land and the people, always on the count that he would understand, that's the horizontally, that he would understand how the idea would operate in its principle.